Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang podcast, episode 312. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Phil Wilson.
Hello.
And our buddy Graham is hanging out by some lake.
Right? It's lake, isn't it?
It's lake time.
Lake time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, is he at a cabin or is he?
Well, their family is a lake place. So yeah. He went up there.
Nice.
So left his wife at home with the dog and the AK-47, and he went up there. And so.
Yeah, usually doesn't he use the AK-47 for fishing?
Exactly. No. For the chipmunks.
Oh, that's
around
it.
The cabin. Yeah. Yeah.
So is he a big fishing opener kind of guy? Because it is the fishing opener, you know.
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think he's a fisherman. Tim, do you know?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he has never mentioned it if he is.
Are any of you guys going to go out and.
No.
Okay.
Can I tell you something? My dad was like the world's biggest fisherman. He loved going fishing.
Yeah.
And when I was 8 years old, he started taking me with him and he would wake me up at 5 a.m. and we'd be in the boat at 5:30.
Yeah.
And we'd stay out there till like 10:30 or 11 o'clock.
Wow.
And so I grew to hate fishing. It's, you know, and of course I never could tell him. Oh, and no. I just remember complaining to my mom, I don't want to be out there for hours.
Dad, I'm not feeling very well.
Yeah. So,
you maybe, know, the only way I could just, cause I had a friend that was a fisherman. We would go, you know, away for, you know, do weekends or something like that. But the only way he could get my ass in the boat is the promise of 10 a.m. beer. So,
there you go. Tim, I don't even know. Where did you grow up as a kid?
Southern California.
Oh, that's where you guys were around Irvine, right? Or is that where you lived before you moved here? No,
City of Orange was where I grew up, which is near Anaheim, where the Angels play. And there's an amusement park up there, Disney something.
Yeah.
So within, you know, a few miles of that is where I grew up.
Okay.
And then we left in the mid-80s, 1985. Left. So I lived there for the first 25 years of my life. And then since 1985, I've been all over the place.
Wow.
With the majority being here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
What is it? The legend of the Twin Cities? Was it work?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And we always enjoyed it in the Midwest. We were out on the East Coast. And so we said, if we were going to move back, we're going to move back to the Midwest. And opportunity came up here in town and we moved back. So we'd spent several years in Milwaukee, which we enjoyed quite a bit.
And Minneapolis, St. Paul, Lakeville, all better for it, Tim. Let me tell you, all better for it.
Good.
Well, wasn't there just some news about Datalink? Because that's where you came here to work for, right?
No, I came here to work for WAMNet, actually. And
that's right.
For Datalink after that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So I don't not tell, keep up with
we're them. All very close friends. We know a lot of
exactly. Right. Exactly. Well, I wrote his memoir. So, you know,
Ghost wrote
the memoir. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let's get into some Minnesota stories, kids.
Well, I wanted to start off by just kind of taking a quick look back to Sunday. I mean, it was, we had talked about it on last week's podcast about the Technovation MN Appapalooza, which was happening on Sunday at the convention center. That was just a gas. It was great. We had, easily 400 people there, you know, with parents and kids and teachers and mentors and friends. It was great.
You did a nice post.
And I saw some really nice, well thought out apps by some of the young teams. We had are happy to say that four of the competing teams were selected to move on to the next level of the Technovation Challenge, which is provided by Technovation nationally, actually globally. So some very great stuff and some very excited girls. It was just, you know, you kind of get jaded when you're developing applications because it's like, well, yeah, I do this and this happens. Yeah. Great. But you know, when, you know, to see young women, just be so excited about what they're doing, you know, whether they're just brought up to present their app or they're selected as a finalist or a winner. It was just great. It was just a great time.
I want to know if we should be concerned that young women are going to take over the world.
Nope.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't think we should be concerned at all. I think we should welcome it gladly. Okay.
All right.
Because old men have kind of fucked it up.
Yeah. Oh, especially old
white men. Speak for yourself.
Well, I'm being very general in my scope, so I shouldn't necessarily do that. But it was a great time, and the Technovation MN folks did a great job. I'm happy to be associated with those folks. So, just had a great time.
That's great. Well, I love these kinds of events.
Yeah. It was really very nice. So, anywho.
Yeah. And then our pals at Jamstick, their guitars are a hit with educators. You know, it's funny because I remember, and Graham and I talked about this on a show a couple times ago, about being at this Minneapolis event. I think Kim Gerritsen brought us there where they were showing the Jamstick. He brought us in the back room and they were demoing it and so forth. And that was, gosh, maybe almost 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them a long time to get out.
Well, they've had the original Jamstick out for a while. This is the Jamstick Plus, which they just had a Kickstarter for. And they closed it with over $800,000 in backing on Kickstarter.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
So their goal was $50,000, and they went way past that.
Very nice.
Yeah. Very nice. No, it's a great idea.
Yep. So, yeah, I suppose it beats having all of those rather inexpensive guitars for the music department that always were out of tune or or whatever they were. So,
well, because it interacts with a tablet, you can, the tablet itself acts as a teacher.
Yeah.
To teach you how to play it. So I think that's the big advantage of this over the traditional, guitars and whatnot.
Well, but also,
are you saying that Learn to Play with Keith Urban is in jeopardy?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, and the kicker is that, for anyone who's listening or you guys who are parents, how many instruments did you buy? Cause I know we had a guitar, a really nice acoustic guitar. And also, we were almost going to buy a saxophone. And then he crapped out on that idea, so that was good.
We always rented, and
that's a good idea.
Inherited a piano from the family, so there was that. That's I think that's the only thing that we have that's permanent. You know, we either rented or borrowed. What was it? Drums, trumpet, things like that. So
yeah, wow. Well, so, I still have my grandfather's trombone. Yeah.
Trombone.
I was thinking Minneapolis St. Paul Star Tribune.
76 tributes in the big.
Yeah. But it's an old silver. He was in the University of Minnesota marching band. And this thing was, I think, made in like 1910. And when I got into high school, when I started music, I don't know, I was like in sixth grade, maybe seventh grade. And my mom and dad tried to convince me to use this trombone. And the slide hardly worked, and I was putting Pond's cold cream on it, and then I would spray it with a little water to try to make it slippery, and none of that worked. So
cold cream?
Yeah, so I wanted to play trumpet, and they finally, my mom and dad went out and bought me a new trombone, and I was just so, I'm pissed to this day, because it was like, wait a minute, I wanted to play trumpet, and you guys went out and bought me a trombone?
They just misunderstood.
Yeah, no.
Speak up, Steve.
No, they wanted me to be part of the trombone legacy. My dad played
legacy.
Trombone at the U of M too. So
big trombone, the trombone legacy.
That's there right. You know. That's right. Well, all the young millennials are playing trombone now. So
it's so true.
Yeah,
I see trombone groups breaking out on the corners all the time.
They do. They got their little hats out there for money. And
they're trombone gangs. So, did you see that? I gotta take a little bit of exception with this story that was in TCB Mag about What was the headline? Minneapolis, St. Paul startup
climate is chilly.
Chilly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had no problem with climate is chilly, but the startup climate, I didn't think so.
Yeah. That's just like, really? Give me a break.
At the end of the article, they talk about, you know, where Minneapolis is ranked number 4 last year from NerdWallet as the best cities to start a business.
Yeah.
So now what is it? 89th in this one?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Huh? Well, yeah. Maybe just this year it's bad.
I don't know. Well, I think it's just one of those things. It's all it all matters on who you ask. So
right.
Not a lot of necessarily people involved in the startup community. I know this is one of those things that they analyze everything from, you know, available employees and that sort of thing. But I think it also, so I mean, that was the one of the metrics they used is, you know, available workforce. So I think it's kind of a good thing that we don't have a lot of available workforce.
Right. Well, but look at how many stealth startups that we have heard of, you know, each one of us, where all of a sudden there's an article that comes out and you're like, wait, who are those guys? We've never seen them before. You know, they've never been on anything. There's no news because they were angel invested in.
Sure.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Sioux Falls way high in this list.
Yeah.
Sioux Falls? Because
of the taxes.
Sioux Falls, number 6. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Mm. And Fargo was a big deal too, wasn't it? What ranked higher than this?
Looking for Fargo.
Yeah, Fargo.
A lot of south, southeast or southwest, I should say, action here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amarillo, Texas. Huh. Interesting.
Ooh. Yeah.
Good steak. Good place to get big steaks is Amarillo.
Amarillo?
Yeah. There's a place called the Country Barn where if you eat like this ridiculously steak, you get to, you get it for free.
Yeah.
It costs like $50 if you just order it, but it's ridiculous. But the smaller steaks there are quite good.
There you go. No. Next time you're in Amarillo.
Next time.
Yep. Starting up a business. Perhaps it's a steak complimentary business.
Wow.
Oh man. And also I was talking to a friend and I just noticed that we have a link for this is that, this Strib bought City Pages. So they're going to put an axe to Vita.mn. Thank God. So,
well, Vita.mn was really hot for a long time, especially with their photography. Yeah. I mean, from a entertainment perspective. And, the thing about City Pages that I think is really interesting is their investigative journalism is pretty good. You know, it takes them a while in between, you know, big news stories that they do, but
the personal ads. Yeah.
Well, then there's.
Yeah. So is the Star Tribune going to have the personal ads now?
I think they're going to be, well, they said anyway, in the press release, they're going to be hands off.
Yeah.
They're going to let them be autonomous. So I don't think they'll touch it at least for a while.
Do people read City Pages online more than City Pages or is that strictly a, you know, you pick up City Pages when you're looking for something to read while you're having coffee or something?
Well, I think it's probably
both. I wonder
what
their online stats are like.
I don't know. I would say it's probably both.
Yeah.
So.
I don't read City Pages a lot. They don't have I'm waiting for the Lakeville Pages version, but.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
I shouldn't wait.
I don't know. You know, you'd probably be able to see this more than either Tim or I, but what are your team members at BuzzFeed? What do they look at? I mean, if they're going to sit at their desk and eat lunch.
Pretty much BuzzFeed.
Okay, all right. Yeah, but you got to look at the competition sometimes, right?
Well, no, that's, you know, being the pure tech start, you know, tech part of the whole team. Yeah, and we're not necessarily overly intrigued by competition other than, you know, what they're doing for features and things like that. But no, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that was a sort of more of a question of what are the kids today reading?
Right.
And it's, I mean, yeah, sure. It's predominantly online. I think, you know, for entertainment and music, there's a lot of individual blogs that do very well that may not necessarily be represented by, you know, buy like a City Pages or something like that. But I think City Pages does very well. I know they do very well, or have done in the past very well in advertising as far as, you know, making good money. So I think it's a good, I think it's a really good move from the Strip, because it, I don't think there's room for two. And I thought Vitamin was kind of lame. So,
well, it became lame. I don't think it was when it was the first couple of years was pretty hot, especially the photography was just really well done. So interesting.
Yeah.
So. Well, speaking of startups and acquisitions, even though it's not an acquisition story, but former Best Buy CEO Brian Dunn has been named chairman of Upsy, a tech startup. And they sell warranties to people who buy electronics, but have you guys heard of Upsy?
Never.
I didn't either.
I don't think I don't know if I would ever necessarily go outside of this, the store environment. If I were interested in buying an extended warranty, I don't know if I would, I think I would do it right there at the cash register and not afterwards after I, you know, did some research. I very rarely take the extended warranties on things, but,
see, I do on mobile devices.
Good
thing you did on the iPhone, huh?
Yeah. Well, on the iPad, when I dropped two of them within 2 weeks and broke two of them, if it hadn't been for AppleCare, I would have been screwed. You know, I probably spent total, $120.
Right. I agree. But I very rarely do that. If I'm buying a TV or a refrigerator, it's like, well, now I'm.
Yeah.
It's just not worth.
No, yeah. Some of that stuff I don't, because especially having been in the consumer electronics space, if you don't have an initial failure, which happens usually in the first 90 days, typically, if you don't have an initial failure, then you've got the full year warranty, and the chances of anything happening is relatively slim. But the thing that is really interesting about Upsy and the whole warranty space is if you buy AppleCare and you break your device or it gets whatever happens to it that's covered under warranty, you go back in the Apple store and they give you another one right then. Mm-hmm. There's a better warranty at Geek Squad for your mobile devices, but they're not going to hand you one out of stock. They're going to send you one. They're going to ship you one. So it's going to take you 2 or 3 days to get it. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what the deal is here on Upsy. Like how quickly, you know, how do they ascertain what the damage is? And then how do they, you know, recompense you. Is that a verb? No.
Sure. Why not?
But how do they pay you off and all that? I suppose I could read the site.
How's it spelled? Upsy is
UPSIE.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't checked their site, but
you know, it could be Oopsie.
Could be Oopsie.
Oh, you're right.
You know, like, oopsie, I dropped it.
Oh, oopsie. You're probably right, Tim. See, that's why you're a marketer. you know all this stuff, right?
That's right.
Anyway, but yeah, it's probably worth some more investigation because obviously Brian Dunn went there for a reason.
Yeah, because he sold a lot of warranties when he was working the Minnetonka store back in the 80s.
That's what the article said. Nobody sold more warranties. It's like, okay.
You buy a stereo from Brian, he's going to get you out the door with a warranty.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, back in the 80s, when I was a manufacturer's rep in the consumer electronics space, we sold for a company called Warrant Tech, and they're now part of American Trust. But this Warrant Tech was essentially a wholesale provider of warranties, and at that point, we had to go through all the training before we could sell them. And at that point, they said only 38% of all legitimate claims are ever claimed. And out of that 38%, there's some incredible percentage where, you know, these guys get a deal on replacement product. So they're buying it at wholesale and yada, yada. Anyway, the point was, is that it can provide the retailer with, you know, 40 to 50% gross margin on the warranty itself. So it's a huge upside for the retailer to be able to sell these warranties. Anyway.
Yeah, it is. It's always a lot. It was always good. I remember we would, when I was doing retail, you would get kind of spiffed for any extended warranty you sold.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Well, it's like insurance, sort of that you may never use it. Probably 90% of the time, you'll never use it.
So, yeah.
Or 99%. I don't even know what the numbers are and things like that. But anyway,
when you use it, it's good. Saves you money.
Yeah.
It does save your money.
Yeah.
Okay.
I still don't buy extended warranty. So
no.
No.
I like wasting money.
Yeah, that's the same here.
Well, as long as you don't lose anything or crack it or whatever.
Or anything like that. Yeah, exactly.
So, Phil, there's this other story here about, which was in the Star Tribune.
The Strobe.
Yeah. The Twin Cities company Oxygen Plan, whom I've never heard of, but you probably know because you're in the space. Oh, nope. Really?
I've never heard of them either.
No, yeah. Taps Mayo to develop stress app.
Right.
So sure. I thought
How can you have a stress app if in your phone? I don't get it. What sensor are they using to
Stress? I don't know if it's a sensor. It may not necessarily be a sensor.
Oh, okay.
It may just be a handy way to take their poll or something, or their survey, which I think it's a question survey, isn't it? Like a 30 question survey.
Well, what I saw was that they have an assessment.
That's it. Yeah.
Part of the app, so that essentially they ask you how you're feeling, or are you under stress? Are you feeling anxious? Blah blah blah, and then they make recommendations inside the app on what to do next. And there's a lot of apps like that in the space, so it's going to be interesting to see what these guys do, because there are some really cool meditation apps. One of which I have, which is, if you've got 5 minutes right now, it'll walk you through a guided meditation. So you can do this mindful meditation, and it's really effective. Or like this article I read, this guy said, well, I was feeling really stressed. I was on the bus heading to work, and I had to make this big presentation in the morning, and I was all freaked out. And I thought, God, what can I do? Oh, so I opened the app, and I knew I had 11 more minutes before the bus arrived. And so I took the 10-minute guided meditation and went through it. And he said, by the time I was done, I was almost asleep. And we got at our destination, and I felt like $1 million. And he said he went in and just nailed the presentation. So there's some efficacy to these things. It's going to be interesting to see what this one does. But everybody wants to connect with Mayo.
Yeah.
It gives them legitimacy.
Well, probably. Yeah.
Well, plus the Mayo knows a lot of stuff.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
All right.
I'm taking the Oxygen Plan test, my stress test, as we speak. So I'll let you know by the end of the podcast how stressed I am.
How are you feeling? Oh,
the stress number. We have a sleep. We have a sleep number and now a stress number.
A stress number.
Yeah. I'm a 65. My sleep number is 65. My stress number is 100.
Oh, you guys are not taking this podcast seriously today.
We never do. So, but what we do take seriously is our liquor delivery services.
There seems to be, this particular article made me kind of look out, realize, boy, there's a lot of places you can get booze delivered from. So,
but it's called Minibar, 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 the latest Twin Cities liquor delivery service. Joins the mix and will undoubtedly be immediately sued by Ministar, owners of Minibar. No, I'm kidding. So liquor delivery service. I'd heard of Drizzly. In fact, we talked about them.
Yep,
we did. On some other podcast.
Drinkfly.
Is it Drinkfly?
No, Drinkfly is another one. And then Bite Squad, which I've never heard of before.
Oh, Bite Squad. We use Bite Squad every day.
Food.
Yeah, for food.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize they did booze. We're within a 7-mile radius of Certix, so this is good. Ooh,
there you go.
Yeah, here's Phil. Could you bring over another keg to the office?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously people do this. The only sad thing for me was years and years and years ago, I delivered for a Bloomington-based company called Grocery Wagon. And you could buy your groceries and have them delivered. And so, I'm in college and I'm driving these part-time routes all over the Twin Cities. I mean, one day I'm in North St. Paul, the next day I'm in Wayzata, that kind of stuff. And man, did I learn the metropolitan area. But I'd go into these houses and there'd be some person who's, you know, retired and a senior citizen, and the house is just a mess and it smells bad and all of that. And then one of the things I'm delivering is, you know, a bottle of Jim Beam. And there's like four of them already in the trash can. And I just remember it making me really sad that they didn't even have to go out of the house, that we'd show up with it, you know? So,
huh.
Well, yeah, I know that's the downside of the story, but,
I don't know. I have a hard time understanding the downside of any access to booze, but you know, that's just,
that's just you. That's right. That's right. So everyone listening, Phil and I did a little FaceTime this morning, because I was showing him my Varidesk stand-up desk, and he handed the phone to his bride, Lori, who was drinking coffee out of a mug that had been purchased in Germany by their daughter. Now, this is how cheap they are. They actually flew her to Germany to buy a mug because it was less expensive. But anyway.
Right.
But I have no idea why I even brought that up now.
I don't know either, but that's okay. You know, it's... You know,
I went off squirrel. On a tangent. Yeah. Look, squirrel.
Squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, our pals, Digital River.
Yeah.
They're going to add to their stack with some value by, launching into professional services.
Yep. Custom and, websites.
Well, it's, you know, to do highly scalable, big deal e-commerce sites is not simple, as true. You well know, Tim. Because you do Magento stuff, right?
Sometimes, yep.
Yep.
Working on an implementation right now.
Yep.
Fact.
And you know, we do a lot of WooCommerce stuff at Innovate Press, and it's
not in the same league as what they're doing at Digital River.
We're not in the same league. No, that's
No. We're in the little pond over in the corner, and they're in the big river.
Well, it's kind of like
it is. Digital it river.
I think the analogy. I think a good analogy would be, we're building a soapbox derby racer, and right. We're going up against General Motors. You know, that's the difference in the e-commerce scale. But it makes me wonder if there's going to be a big demand for this.
I'd imagine that they're doing it because there is demand for it.
Okay. All right.
You know, it sounds like it's something that's logical for them to do as a, you know, as a service,
yeah.
Help their customers implement their solutions, you know, right. do customized coding. And it doesn't sound like they're going to add, you know, a bench of people. It looks like they're working with other companies on the outside to help them do it. But they did bring in some new SVP of global professional services to help coordinate it.
Okay. So. Well, could be interesting.
Yep. The guy comes from Wipro, which is a big India-based company, but they're, you know, they have operations all over the world. They do big time professional services in the retail space. So
got it. Huh.
So they'll implement your SAP or your Oracle or what have you.
Yep. Yep. So big deal, supply chain stuff.
Yep. Yep.
Great. Well,
before we get into some Apple discussion, because now we have an Apple segment, it seems.
It's news.
Apple news. It's their segment.
Calling it Apple news.
When do we put in Android news? That's what I want to know. And
when they have some news. When Google has some news, we'll do it. Like Google I/O, I'm going to cover that sucker.
So I wanted to let you know that I have my stress number, my score. I guess higher is better. I'm fine. My stress is fine at home and at work. However, I seem to be moderately stressed socially. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. What does it mean, Tim? Why am I stressed socially? Let's see. Well, modest distress in my social world. And although you're finding ways to deal with stressors, there may be some areas of your homework or social life that may be toxic to your well-being. That's it. I can't be seen with you guys anymore.
Uh-oh.
You're toxic.
All right. So because it's Apple news, Steve, what do you think of the Apple Watch?
Well, I've had it now for a few days, and it's pretty cool technology, but here are my buts.
We have a butt.
It's yet another device charge. Sort of a drag.
Yeah.
I'm struggling a little bit with the usefulness of it.
Really?
Yeah, just a little bit.
This is a shocker.
You know it tells time, right?
It does tell time, which is
okay. That's good.
Which is
cool. It's a good use for it.
Yeah, yeah. well, so here's what I thought was interesting. You know, I looked at the article of the Apple's Watch hidden port could be its best feature.
Yep.
And what I saw, I'll put a link in the show notes to a story in 9to5 Mac about how the heart rate, the pulse checker in the Apple Watch using the sensor is almost identical to the best one out there, the best personal sensor out there. I think that's probably the biggest thing is there's all this buzz now about how they were just didn't have time to fully implement all aspects of the sensor, like the blood oxygenation capability. You know, if you go into the hospital, they put that thing on your finger now to see what your blood oxygen levels are. And it's right. All it is just an infrared sensor.
Well, that's, I saw somewhere in at least in Dev News that they're saying that the watch actually is capable. It just hasn't been activated yet to check blood oxygen. So.
Right. Well, I think the reason for that is they just couldn't get it together fast enough.
I agree. But that hidden port thing, that's very interesting to me, especially as it pertains to battery life. And there already is a couple of different manufacturers that are building or manufacturing wristbands that actually act as additional battery power.
So I find that
quite intriguing.
Yep. Well, so here are the things that I like about it. The watch function is cool because you can have the date and you can have in each corner, four corners, you can have other things going on. You know, I have the stopwatch and some other things. But in terms of the apps, what's really cool is being able to not only get all my notifications like I did on my phone, and now they're actually useful because before I'd have to take my phone out and sometimes the notifications were already gone. But like the SmartThings app, I can actually trigger events now through the watch. I can use the Apple remote to control my Apple TV. I can use Apple Pay. I've only done it once now through my watch instead of having to take my phone out. And the activity monitor stuff is really great. I mean, in terms of this is the number of steps. Phil, you and I were talking about the NAG. About stand up for 5 minutes every hour.
Yeah, the NAG.
And so
I'm sure that's what they call it, the NAG.
The feature. NAG. So here I am at my new stand up desk, and I've been using it for a couple of days. And so yesterday I was standing collectively for about 7 hours out of the day. And so my wife and I are watching a movie last night, and all of a sudden the thing starts bitching at me for standing up for my 5 minutes every hour, you know.
Yeah, just watch the movie. So
it's like, whoa, well, come on.
Tell those people with an Apple Watch at the movie theater because halfway through the movie, they'll all stand.
That's right. Anyway, so for me, the jury's still out on whether or not this is like the most earth shaking thing ever. But, you know, in a lot of ways, all I had to compare the first iPhone with was my Trio 750. And compared to the Trio 750 or a BlackBerry that it had that same year, there was just no contest. I mean, to have an app-driven interface. Mm-hmm. But remember, it was only Apple apps. There was no App Store. And so I see the same thing with the watch, but everybody wants the same level of efficacy that they get with their smartphone from a wearable. And it's just too early. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut on anything negative until I've had it on my wrist for 2 weeks. I will take it off at night when I shower.
Well, you have to.
You have to charge it. but I'm going to wait 2 weeks and see what happens, you know, how I feel about it at that point. And I think that we'll see maybe at WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference, we'll see some stuff there. But I think the biggest thing with this will be the heart, the health, the walking, you know, various fitness things. I think that the integration of it with your body is going to be something that is going to be pretty amazing. So anyway,
it's my, I don't think the watch is, you know, ground shaking or earth shattering or anything huge like that. I think it is an integral step. I don't think you should expect the same sort of I can't live without a feel from the watch as you would the iPhone. It was just a complete change. That was epic. This is not epic. It's an extension. So yeah. Go on. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that, like we've always said, when they come out with when Apple does an announcement and people say, oh yeah, but how come it wasn't this, or how come there wasn't the next big thing? It's like, well, unless they come out with a holodeck or warp drive, people are going to be disappointed. You know, that it's going to have to be some amazing new category that no one thought of or thought to pull together in a device. And I just think that's an unrealistic expectation.
Well, I think these are going to be more popular once they can be autonomous, where they don't require a tethered phone with them. Because right now it's just it's a spare screen for your iPhone.
Right, exactly.
Right. So when it becomes its own thing, I think that's when people will start to look at it as an alternative to their smartphone. And you could do some pretty interesting things, like use it just for the connection to the internet when you're out and about, and use an iPad or whatever for your main screen.
Yeah.
You know, so that as a accessory to the iPhone, I just don't see this as being a huge deal like the iPhone was. It'll be a nice little business for them. It'll be sort of like Apple TV, you know, nice little business. A lot of people will have them. Some people won't.
Well, I would predict, though, that the whole Internet of Things space, specifically home automation.
Oh, here we go.
Well, based on what I'm seeing with the SmartThings app and how useful it is, I don't know. I think that's going to be huge. There are going to be things that we don't see yet, like, you know, the new Apple TV that's been rumored, in terms of how the thing interfaces and so on. So I don't know. I'm just not going to obsess over it.
I think as a presence sensor, that, you know, all the sensors that are built into it, that's interesting. Yeah. But I think that kind of bracelet or whatever could be something without a screen or a smaller screen, and could be a lot cheaper and deliver the kind of value that you're getting from, you know, the smart things recognizing you're in the house, from your phone. So there'll be things like that, that will be popular and people will find useful. And I think a lot of people are going to find this useful. It's just, it's very, very early. And I think it's going to take two or three generations of these before they really have something that becomes compelling for a lot more people. Enthusiasts will be interested in this, but for regular people to get into this, it's going to take some more refinement.
Yeah. Yep. Well, speaking of things that I think will probably end up needing more refinement, is Apple Store guru Ron Johnson,
guru,
with his new business Enjoy, about delivering tech devices to people. I don't know. I'm really struggling with this one, whether or not this makes any sense.
It's a concierge service,
standalone business. Yeah.
It's a concierge service for devices. It does make some sense. There was a retail analyst that we work with whose reaction was, is this for old people? And I think she's right, that a lot of old people will enjoy their service. Boy, that was a pun, wasn't it? will enjoy having someone come to their house and set up their smartphone or their computer or their Apple Watch, you know? And right now he's saying that it's going to be, you know, built into the price, and his prices are going to be, you know, competitive with everybody else's. So it's basically a free concierge service, which free is pretty good.
Well, you know what? It's not just old people though. 'Cause I've got a client who shall remain nameless. He's 39 years old. He has two doctorates. He's in the medical space and built a site for his startup, and he needed coaching, and he needed somebody to help him set up his phone with multi emails that he wants to manage just in Gmail and all that kind of stuff. And this guy's smart enough to figure it out on his own, but he had to look at where he spends his time. You know, do I spend 8 hours figuring this all out, or do I just pay somebody for an hour or two of time and tell them what I need, and they come in and just do it for me and then show me how to work it?
Yep.
And there's a lot of people out there like that. So
I think it's a reasonably good idea.
Yeah.
So we'll see if Mr. Johnson can pull this off.
That'll be good.
Yep.
Also, our pals at Comcast are extending their home automation platform. Speaking of Internet of Things.
And I put this in just for you, Steve.
You did? Tim, Internet thank of things. You.
Internet of
thank things. Thank you. Also, they added the Nest thermostat. Is it Rachio or Rachio? Sprinkler systems. Locks from August and lighting from Lutron. Now, Lutron, you know, you walk into Home Depot or Menards, and you see Lutron everywhere. I mean, they're sort of the gold standard of electronic switching. I mean, not that it's not all electronic switching, and plugs and so on, but stuff, you know, that's pretty cutting edge. But, do you think that AT&T, who's also big in this space, and Comcast, this Xfinity Home, do you guys think this has legs?
Yeah, it's an in-home service. It's an extension of the, internet service that they deliver. So, you know, they're just trying to add value on top of the connection, your internet connection at home.
Yeah.
One other interesting bit of Comcast news, and I should probably mention I still do work with Comcast, is that they announced this last week that they have more internet customers than they do cable TV customers.
I saw that. Yep. If you could find that link, stick it in the show notes. Okay.
So, you know, they're transforming from a cable TV company to being, you know, more of a services company that's based on an internet connection. And at some point you're going to get your TV through IP as well.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, long on that road right now with the X1 offering and whatnot. So I just see them adding more and more services like this to their internet play.
Yep.
They're mentioned in this story kind of at the end, briefly, is that they're going to be publishing an API to their Xfinity Home.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So it'll allow other people besides the ones that they integrated with initially to write their software that takes advantage of their system. So
very smart.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Yep. Good.
Yep.
Hey guys, Google is running an educators conference as we speak, live online. Did you see that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I just found that this morning. And what's interesting is I then went out and found some educators at a couple of different sites. One's Classroom 2.0. I just logged in. I used to have a client that used it. And I don't know, there's something like, you know, 80,000 teachers that belong to Classroom 2.0. And there's a lot of buzz about this conference, and what everybody really likes is that it's all about the usage of Google apps, not hardware. So they're not pitching any specific, I mean, it's like they don't care. It's like, well, you know, hey, if you're running Ubuntu Linux, we don't care. You're running Chromebook, that's great. You know, if you've got a Mac, if you've got Android, if you've got iOS, doesn't matter. And so it's really positioning Google apps as the hub for education. And I think that's a brilliant strategy on Google's part.
Well, you know, Lakeville Schools has started investing in Chromebooks, as a matter of fact, and you know that mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about Lakeville Schools and what they're doing, and yeah, there's very much a heavy usage of Google and Google Apps within the district. And in fact, you know, my daughter has a Drive that they use, and you know, they all have an account at Google. So I really like the fact that this conference is online. I think it's great. You can hop in at any point in time. There are tracks for educators, administrators, IT folks, and then just anyone that are sort of general topics, and the products that are highlighted in each of those are you know, noted in the schedule, so you know what they're working on. And I think it's a great unique way to look at it. And if you want to peek in at what some uses for you know, technology and online technology are for education, this would be a great way to see it, you know, whether you use the app experience or not.
Yeah. Well, and 43,000 educators from 12 different countries signed up in advance. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this today or tomorrow or even next week, know that Google always puts these videos online after the fact. When that will happen, we'll keep an eye out and let you know. But
LeVar Burton spoke yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They've got some good keynotes.
Nice. Hmm. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and so, then Tim, check that out. Tim, you talked about Google I/O just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that, are you a developer so you can watch stuff online?
Well, they usually, at least for the keynotes, those are always live streamed. So right. they tend to be very long. So I'll watch the first part of one maybe, or I'll have it on in the background, but that's coming up pretty soon, I think.
Yeah.
People parachuting out of planes and with their glass on. That's all the sort of stuff that happens at I/O. So yeah. It happens the 28th and 29th.
Of May.
Of May?
Yeah.
Yep. Huh. Lovely San Francisco. So, but I/O is also sort of famous among developers as the place for the world's best swag. So they tend to give away things like phones and Chromebooks and things like that. So it's always a big event.
You know what they don't give away at Google I/O though?
Free subscriptions to Google Apps.
They don't give away Steve's security tip of the week.
They don't.
Ooh, good point.
Steve's security tip of the week.
you know why they don't give away the security tip of the week at Google I/O? No horses allowed.
Oh, that's why. All right.
In the Musk on side.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of touched on this before in the past, but this is going to be a real short one. To use two-factor authentication.
Right.
And so as I was trolling through some cybersecurity articles this past week, there was a really interesting one about Kevin Mitnick. Now, if you know him, if you remember him, he was the big deal hacker who... they caught in, I don't know, South Carolina or something, after he had been breaking into all these corporate systems and all that, and they sent him to prison, and he came out reformed, and he also came out as a cybersecurity expert who formed a company, and he's now, making money as a consultant. Well, so he, at CeBIT, which is the big, consumer electronic and computer show in Germany, he showed how easy it was to compromise a computer and then to hack into the banking accounts and all this kind of different stuff. And so that was a big aha to a lot of people in the audience. But here's the kicker. If the person who owned that computer, if they were real, but if that person who owned the computer was using two-factor authentication or 2FA, that hacking couldn't have happened, even if the computer was compromised. So what two-factor authentication is, just to remind everybody, is that as you log in, you are then asked for typically a six-digit code. And that code, then you put that code in, and if you steal somebody's password, but they have two-factor authentication set up, you also have to have their phone or the device that the two-factor authentication is running on. And so without both, you can't get in. And it's real simple to do. It's easy to set up. I'll put some links in the show notes. Also, a really interesting list of sites that do or do not yet support two-factor authentication. And some of those were a surprise. And then where to get the Google Authenticator app for your Android or iOS device. And, you know, if you want to use a super simple password for your email because you just simply can't remember and you don't want to use a password manager, this is a no-brainer way to do it, to be significantly more secure. And that's my tip.
Nice tip.
Great.
Nice tip. Great. It's always good to go back to the basics because that is exactly right.
Well, it is. And I got to tell you, it makes me sad every day when I talk to somebody, especially somebody in my family. And I feel like I'm a really shitty salesman because I can't sometimes convince them to use either two-factor authentication or use a password manager. And I said, look, I'll even set it up for you. I'll help you with it. I'll train you on it. You know, yada, yada, yada. No, that's okay. I mean, they just don't want to. And then those are the same people that freak out and, you know, call me at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. Please. Oh, I got hacked. Please help me. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I did the horse is out of the barn. So
I noticed that Wells Fargo does use two-factor authentication and U.S. Bank does not.
Right. Mm. Isn't that interesting?
Hmm.
Very.
One has to wonder.
Why is that?
I don't know. Well, I know U.S. Bank has the rather complex login system to begin with. So
yeah.
But it's
nice.
It should definitely.
Yeah. I use it for, even my Microsoft, OneDrive and my Microsoft Live account. Now my Office account too. And, so my Google Drive, my Dropbox and OneDrive are all using two-factor authentication. You know, again, this is not, there is no panacea. The only secure computer is one that's not on the internet and it has never been on the internet and that you've never put a thumb drive into or never left unattended. I mean, it's like the only.
Or taken out of the box.
Or taken out of the box. That's right. That's right. So, you know, there's no panacea, but, you know, by the same token, you don't put a tank in your front yard to make sure that nobody breaks into your house.
You haven't seen Tim's front yard lately, yeah, have you?
That's right. No, he just duct tapes shotguns, so if anybody opens the front door.
I have a big cannon out front.
It's the Looney Tunes. It's the Looney Tunes version. I gotcha.
That's right. That's right.
Gotcha. So thanks very much for the tip of the week. Time for another of the week, and it's the cool thing of the week. And
I love
with Tim.
So I can't believe we have talked about these guys, but I just saw this last week after the show, and it's called Blue Smart. And it's kind of the Internet of Things luggage. They did a Indiegogo last year that raised almost $2 million. And basically what it is it's a smart bag.
Smart piece of luggage, yeah.
Right. It basically has a single board computer in it. And it does things like it has a lock that you can lock or unlock with your smartphone. You know, it's as a smartphone app. It tracks the location of the bag. It has a charger in it. So because the single board computer has to have power all the time to run, they basically have a big honking battery, and it has places where you can plug in your phone, your laptop, whatever, to recharge. They also have a built-in scale, so it weighs what you're putting into the bag, so you won't go over. It's really well thought out, and they have a deal with Uber. So if let's say your bag gets delayed somewhere, that an Uber will go out and pick it up and deliver it to you. So it's $329. It's on pre-order right now.
It's the carry-on size, right?
Yeah. And it's, it's, you know, a young startup from California, and they're, this is a really, really good idea. And I can't believe it took this long for me to, you know, see this.
Well, for those of you that are, you know, also very impatient, you can always see exactly where your luggage is while you're standing waiting at the carousel. It's like,
right.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I tried to convince my wife about this, and her attitude was, oh, great. One more thing to charge. No, honey.
Now, that's the second time you've brought that up.
I know. But, you know,
you're running out of outlets over there. Is that the deal?
No. Well, I just bought her a little plug that's got two 2.1 amp plugs in it, so she can plug her iPad and her iPhone in when she's traveling. And it's, you know, it runs on multiple electricity strengths. Name blew out of my head here. But this bag, Tim, I don't know if you noticed at the bottom of the campaign, they went 3,860% above their goal.
They wanted 50,000 and they got almost $2 million.
Yeah. It's like, do you think there's any demand out there? My God. Yeah. But I like the pocket in the front where you can slip your laptop and your tablet in there.
Yeah. And you can charge them.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty sweet.
That's good. It's good.
All right, Steve, what's yours?
Mine is something called the Neptune Suite. And it really intrigued me, and I've been trying to figure out exactly what it is. But basically, the hub, the thing that contains all your data and the things, all the stuff you care about, is the smartwatch. And it is thick, and it's a big band, but it's got a lot of juice in it, and you're Bluetoothing into all these other devices. But for $600, it's a smartwatch, a phone, a tablet, and a keyboard, a dongle, and a wireless headset. And the dongle is for putting it up on your TV. And same sort of thing. They wanted to raise $100,000. They still have 6 days left, and they're at over $1 million. And and it's all Android based, and it looks really, really interesting. If you do nothing, just go to this link and watch the video. Because obviously it's extremely well done, but it gets the concept across in like 2 minutes. And I just thought it was just really cool.
So you get the whole suite.
The whole suite, all those products for $600.
They're sold out.
Well, of course they are. Yeah.
Although you can get just the hub itself by itself.
Yeah, but who'd want just the hub? I mean.
Well, do you need all the other crap? I don't know. Maybe you do.
Well, why would you wear the hub if you didn't have all the other crap?
I guess you got a point there.
Yeah. But, you know, I look at the hub.
Because you want a big-ass thing on your wrist?
Well, there's a, yeah, but look at this. See, I'm comparing the screen and the amount of stuff on the screen of the hub, which is the watch.
Right.
And I'm comparing that to the, you know, little teeny screen on my current Apple Watch. And I think, boy, that'd be kind of cool to have that kind of screen real estate. So anyway, that was my cool thing.
It is cool.
What's yours, Phil?
Well, mine is a very low tech and really not necessary, but I still liked it anyway, which was basically the DRM Freedom clip for your Keurig machine.
The Keurig 2.0.
Keurig. So I'm not a Keurig fan. I would never buy a Keurig. I would never encourage anybody to buy a Keurig simply because of the waste that is generated by these things because of all of the K-cups that are floating around now. There's ways around that. But anyway, I would never, Keurig recently in their 2.0 obviously wanted to limit people exclusively to their Keurig K-cups and not some other off-brand. Right. So they basically have a little reader in it that guarantees that you're only using a Keurig manufactured cup, and it puts up a little oops sign on your screen, I guess. But there is a company that is now offering the Freedom Clip, which is basically a little clip that covers the reader in the Keurig machine. Now, you can do the same thing with a small piece of tape, but I thought this was a rather elegant solution to that, more elegant solution. So,
and it's only $1.99.
It's $1.99 to screw Keurig. So
yeah,
there you go. Well, I have a Keurig 1.0 and We do go through cups, but yes. there's also a little cup.
Where do those cups go? Where do those cups go, Steve? Yeah, yeah. Right in that landfill with the diapers, right?
Well, my daughter's been giving me a bad time, so I just got done looking at a recycle a cup, and I'll put a link in the show notes. Yes.
And it's get the one with the filters, the little filters.
Well, I have one
instead of the cup is what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of ones that you can buy that have, you know, like even the one that Keurig sells, which aren't any good really. The coffee tastes terrible, but if you get the one, I have a Melito one that has little bitty, filters.
Yeah.
And you put your pizza or whatever, you know, good coffee in it. And that makes a better cup in the Keurig than anything that I've tried.
Huh, so better yet,
just I think it has something to do with the, you know, with the way that the pressure of the water going in and, you know, these filters, what they do. So anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's more environmentally friendly because it's just this little paper.
Just get yourself a nice drip coffee maker.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm waiting for my Keurig 1.0 to die. I've already killed one, and I'm on my second one. When it dies, I'm going to go to AeroPress or something.
There you go. There you go. Do the AeroPress.
I love my Keurig. But yeah. we're like recycle fiends here, and we're the only ones in the neighborhood.
Except for the K-Cup. Yeah. No, I'm not recycling that, are you? Are you?
I know. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get in the way of my cup of coffee, Wilson.
Well, but there's also these new, because obviously Keurig's aware of it too, that there's this whole, on that page that you put the Freedom Clip link on,
yeah,
is the recycle cups, and you pop it into this external cup device, and they just sit in there, and it just contains the coffee, and so yeah, they're aware of it. And it's, I just wish my favorite Starbucks vanilla was available like that, which it isn't yet. So anyway, all right, well, let's talk about events. Are there any?
I put a bunch of new ones in this week.
Yeah. We got beta.mn, which I know is sold out on the 14th. Hack the Gap, which is the all women's coding hackathon on the 16th and 17th.
The gender gap. Hack that gender gap.
Right.
So, got it.
Those are coming up pretty quickly. What else, Tim?
I put Mini Fair 6, which is at the Hack Factory. It's for makers.
Right.
And then the next week, that's on the 23rd. And then on the 30th at the fairgrounds is the Maker Fair.
So what's the difference between the two?
I think that the Hack Factory is just doing a pre-Maker Fair thing. It's like a hackathon kind of a deal the week before. I think it's because, you know, maybe people are in town or, you know, for the Maker Fair. I don't know.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there's a lot of good maker stuff going on here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, Treehouse Health has an event on May 28th, which is Cool Doesn't Count in Healthcare. And I'll put that in the show notes. Yeah. Yeah, it does. I guess not. And then there's one other one. I can't remember now. I can't find it. I'm looking through to find it, but I'll stick that in the show notes as well.
Sounds good. All right. So there's still plenty going on.
There is. So. Yep.
And
yep.
You know, we'll always talk about it next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast. Thanks, guys.
Have a good week.
Take care.
Cheers.